is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We just heard the wrap-up of today's January 6th committee hearing. They continue as the committee investigates former President Trump's pressure campaign following the 2020 election and the lead-in to the January 6th Capitol insurrection. Today, the committee heard testimony from top Justice Department officials, including Acting Attorney General Jeffrey Rosen and former Acting Deputy Attorney General Richard Donahue, neither of whom complied with Trump's multiple requests to claim election fraud and corruption, and who repeatedly, they say, informed the president that those claims were false. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What surprised you? What stood out to you about today's hearings? What questions do you have about the significance of some of the things we heard? What do you want to happen next? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Lily Gorin joins us now, professor of politics and global studies at Carroll University. Lily, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me on again. Happy to be here.
Zooming out from the details, today's session focused on pressure on the Justice Department to make claims of fraud, to investigate claims of fraud. Why is that important to focus on?
Well, because part of the discussion in the hearings about January 6th is that it wasn't just about January 6th, the events at the Capitol, but also a lot of the sort of various pressure points along the way to try to overturn the outcome of the election. And what we heard about today was the sort of efforts by President Trump and others in his administration to essentially try to overthrow, if you will, the folks who were at the top of the Justice Department who had also been appointed by President Trump.
The sustained campaign here is something that has stood out from all of these public hearings. I think thinking back, looking at it in real time, you might see some tweets here, a press conference from our lawyers representing the president, the then president there, some court cases getting thrown out. Looking back and getting kind of the day by day, blow by blow, this is something, a very sustained ongoing effort to come up with a way to keep President Trump in power after he lost. Can you talk about how that's emerged?
Yeah, this was a really interesting, essentially, discussion that is trying to sort of establish the narrative of the efforts by President Trump and Rudy Giuliani and a couple of other people, John Eastman, who we heard a lot about last week, to essentially try to invalidate the election outcomes in a number of states, to get the Justice Department to say that there had been all kinds of fraud committed that they investigated and said that there is no evidence at all of any of these allegations that you keep making. And you know, one of the things that we heard was that President Trump called Jeffrey Rosen every day after the election, essentially every day, to talk about a different allegation that had already been investigated and where there was no fraud found in the case. Every day, a different sort of approach. And so you have these gentlemen who were appointed by President Trump, who had been serving in the Justice Department, who basically said to the president a number of times, more than a number of times, that essentially there was no fraud that he and Giuliani and a number of others kept saying was out there. And that ultimately there was another attorney in the Justice Department in the Environmental Division, this gentleman, Jeffrey Clark, who starts to do some machinations to try to, again, move forward on suggesting that the whole election had been fraudulent. And what you heard in the testimony today, kind of in a riveting way, was the way that Jeffrey Clark went about this and that he tried to get President Trump to appoint him as Attorney General.
A lot of this centers around this draft letter from Jeffrey Clark, who you just mentioned, and the president wanting a claim, a public claim from the Justice Department that that the election was corrupt. And then he said, effectively, leave it to me and Republicans in Congress, as we heard in the testimony, to take it from there. Can you talk about the role of that letter and the standoff over it?
Well, and again, Clark had drafted this letter and he wanted Rosen and Donahue to sign it. And this is, it, again, in sort of contradicts what Bill Barr had previously said, that the election was not, in fact, fraudulent, and that all, a lot of these claims that it was, and there was fraud here and there was a fraud there and so on and so forth, had been investigated, had been debunked, and that Clark came in and had no, again, one of the points that the others, other members of the Justice Department made, that he had no experience in election management or the role of the Justice Department with regard to elections, which are run by the states, and that this kind of a letter would, in fact, undermine people's understanding of what had been previously indicated, which was that the election was fair and clean.
And one thing that stood out, there was a image of the White House visitor or call log identifying Jeffrey Clark as the acting attorney general, though he hadn't been appointed yet. Ultimately, after this standoff just a few days before January 6th, didn't become the acting attorney general. It looks like that decision was very close to being made, except for this, again, what is it, 2.5 hour, very tense meeting.
Yeah, and the image that was presented by the committee shows that he's identified as the acting attorney general at about 4:15 in the afternoon on, I think it's Sunday, the January 4th, when this meeting takes place. And the meeting then takes place 2 hours later at 6 p.m., where they have, you know, all of these folks from the Justice Department and Pat Cipollino, Cipollini, who is the White House counsel, are involved in this meeting and the discussion. And this is when the president wants to essentially move Jeffrey Clark in to be acting attorney general, and has the, at that point, attorney general in the room, as well as a number of the deputy attorney general, attorneys general,
right,
in the room, and that they essentially in a united front say that this is not a good move.
We're talking to Lily Gorin from Carroll University, looking at today's hearing of the January 6th committee, focusing on pressure from President Trump on top Justice Department officials to make a claim of corruption and fraud in the 2020 elections. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org with your reactions, your questions, your comments. That's 800-642-1234. I want to give a listen to a Republican Representative Adam Kinzinger from Illinois, looking at the significance of some of the testimony from Richard Donahue with the Justice, formerly of the Justice Department. Here is a listen. I hope. Nope, we don't have it. Okay. Kinzinger, in the clip that we're now playing, was hoping to hammer home the significance of just say it was corrupt and leave the rest to us. And that, in a way, hands it off to the next part of the ongoing plan for something to happen in Congress, something with the vice president to claim to accept alternate electors, to effectively turn the election over. Can you connect the dots a little bit there, Lily, from what the Trump, what the former president was trying to get the Justice Department to do, to what he then hoped would happen in Congress?
That if there was this sort of public articulation of the Justice Department sort of saying that the election is corrupt, and so therefore the outcome can't be trusted, and therefore these slates of electors who have been certified by a variety of states are potentially not legitimate, then you can move into what happened on January 6th, where you have the formal counting of the of the Electoral College votes from the slates of electors, and that if those can be then challenged as being illegitimate because the election itself is wholly corrupt, then some of the plan that John Eastman had cooked up with regard to sort of sending it back to the states and having them reinvestigate and delay and so forth might have been able to be put into place.
And then we've heard about a meeting of members of Congress with the president in December, members of Congress later asking for pardons for their role, apparently, in that meeting. What did we learn today about coordination between President Trump and his supporters in Congress?
Yeah, this was kind of came right at the end of the hearings and the discussion today was a little bit of a discussion of a variety of members of Congress, some of them fairly high profile, although not necessarily that long serving, who had come to the pardon attorney's office and asked to be put on the pardon list. And I think this is also one of the interesting points that Adam Kinzinger made, which is that you often don't ask for pardons unless you've committed a crime.
We're talking to Lily Gorin, professor of politics and global studies at Carroll University, looking at today's January 6th hearings and testimony from public officials. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Were you following the hearings today? What stood out to you? Do you have questions about the hearing? Who else would you like to hear testimony from, live and in public or pre-recorded? Join in at 800-642-1234 with your comments, your reactions, your questions. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time.
Tomorrow on The Morning Show, it's a bison cattle crossbreed. Beefalo farmers say it's healthier and better for the environment than traditional cattle. We talk with a longtime beefalo farmer and the association after 7.
On the Ideas Network, you're invited to be part of the conversation. When you call our talk shows, you play an important role. If you have a question or comment, we want to hear it. Be part of the conversation and check out our caller guidelines at WPR.org/guidelines.
Wisconsin Public Radio is a service of the Wisconsin Educational Communications Board and the University of Wisconsin-Madison, with additional financial support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and from listeners through the Wisconsin Public Radio Association.
Wisconsin Public Radio's website is made for your mobile phone. Read the news from the state and the world and listen to our streams. It's all formatted for your mobile phone or tablet. Stay on top of the news at WPR.org.
You're listening to Wisconsin Public Radio.
It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Lily Gorin, professor of politics and global studies at Carroll University, with us to analyze today's January 6th hearings. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Pretty quiet out there. Are you not paying attention to these hearings? No big deal, do you think? Or is this something significant? You're glad we're learning what happened after the November 2020 elections. What do you hope comes out of this? Do you want to see prosecutions? Why or why not? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Lily, turning to that question of what comes out of this, we see FBI delivering subpoenas, collecting evidence from the home, apparently, of Jeffrey Clark earlier today. Subpoenas going out to some of the people who presented themselves as alternate pro-Trump electors in some states. Haven't heard about them happening in Wisconsin yet. What are you wondering about watching for when it comes to possible legal consequences for people involved in this?
Well, some of the points that were being made today was that, you know, there are issues around, you know, criminal issues around some of the moves that were being made by somebody like Jeffrey Clark, and particularly in regard to how he was operating within the Justice Department. And you heard a lot about that from Rosen and Donahue in terms of, you know, sort of how the Justice Department operates and who is supposed to be in conversation with the president, because as we note, the Justice Department is not the president's lawyer. The Justice Department is the government of the United States lawyers. And so that there are a variety of different components to what was discussed today. I believe also that Rosen said something really interesting in this regard towards the end of his testimony. He said that the Justice Department, if it gets out of the role it is supposed to play, that it is very bad for our country. And that part of what was being asked of it was to essentially get out of the role that it is supposed to play.
Let's go to our callers now. Chris is with us in Madison. Chris, hi.
Happy almost Friday. I'm just curious what you all think is going to be the result of this hearing. I mean, I think a lot of these folks own Teflon suits. It seems that a lot of them have had some wrongdoing, but everything just kind of seems to bounce off and nobody does anything about it. Just curious.
Chris, thanks a lot for the call. Even apart from possible legal consequences, Lily, what do you say to Chris?
Well, I mean, part of what's going on is the current Justice Department is building a case against a variety of people that may or may not include the former president around a lot of these machinations and the January 6th events. And we have seen at least some of the folks who were involved in storming the Capitol have been indicted and they have been tried or, you know, they've pled. But what's going on now and what we're seeing in terms of the January 6th committee from Congress is essentially laying out where and how these conspiracies were essentially woven together, and that it wasn't just the storming of the Capitol that was involved in all of this. And that, you know, the January 6th committee is to some degree sort of trying to have the narrative comprehensible to many of us citizens, and that the Justice Department will now play a role or has been playing a role in potentially moving forward with criminal or civil indictments of various people.
Chris, thanks for the call. Bob joins us now in Madison. Bob, hi.
Yeah, hi. We learned today a little more about this whole plot to submit slates of fake electors and who might be implicated in that. And I would love to learn more about how Ron Johnson is connected to all that. We heard a little bit earlier this week, but he tried denying, but his denial really wasn't to the point. So I'm kind of hoping that Ron Johnson's guilt is better defined as the hearings proceed.
Bob, thanks for the call. Bob, referring to the text revealed earlier this week in one of those hearings between a Johnson staffer, his chief of staff, and a Vice President Pence staffer, suggesting that the senator wanted to give the vice president slates of electors from Wisconsin and Michigan. Now, I'm trying to follow this while watching the hearings today. Senator Johnson apparently said on a conservative radio show that the documents in question had come from an office of a member of Congress in Pennsylvania. Lily, what do you want to know that we don't know at this point about Senator Johnson and his role with these so-called alternate electors?
Well, one of the things that I have, you know, again, I've also been doing the same thing that you've been doing, Rob, in terms of like reading the articles in between the hearings and trying to follow the machinations here. But apparently this envelope of alternative electors came to Johnson's office from elsewhere, and nobody seems to know where it came from. So I guess one of the things that I want to know is, where did it come from? Who generated it? Because apparently it was on the Republican Party of Wisconsin letterhead. So it came from someplace in Wisconsin. That was what I read in one of the news articles. But how it got to this House member, to Ron Johnson, I don't know.
And this is all happening just in the hours before Congress convened to count the electoral ballots.
Yeah, this was, you know, they convened around, 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and this was like at noon.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Cyril is with us in Madison. Cyril, hi.
Hello, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
Oh, what to bring up, he asks. I don't know. You're probably remembering. 50 years ago last Friday was the date of the Watergate break-in, which is the last historic government conspiracy that that we had to endure. I was 9, 10, and 11 years old at that time, and I watched the Watergate hearings on TV with all the main characters, including a very young senator named Joe Biden, who was on the Watergate committee. And I am just so disheartened that 50 years, two generations after all that, we can go and hit replay on our history button again.
Cyril, thanks for the call. Lily, especially today, I think, with the focus on pressure on Justice Department officials, people are thinking back to, as Cyril was saying, the Watergate investigations.
Yeah, and you know, the famous, quote, Saturday Night Massacre of folks in the Justice Department, because Nixon wanted to fire the special investigator, and that could only be done by the attorney general. And so he had a variety of attorneys general who resigned because they wouldn't do it. And that was, you know, one of the things that was referred to during the Watergate era as the Saturday Night Massacre. And so what you're seeing in a weird sort of parallel from the discussions at the hearings today was the potential threat of quite a few members of the Justice Department resigning in protest if Jeffrey Clark had been appointed as the acting attorney general.
Thanks for that call. Time for one more call. Carrie is with us in Wisconsin. Carrie, hi. Are you there, Carrie? Oh, I think we lost her on the road. She was interested in hearing Senator Johnson testify in this. And that's been a question, Lily, whether we'd see testimony, members of Congress, in effect, questioning other members of Congress, or in this case, the Senate. Do you expect to see that?
I don't know. There's been some discussion about subpoenaing or inviting some members of Congress who may have been involved in some various ways to testify, but it has not been sort of the main thrust of what the House committee is really looking at.
In just our last minute or so, Lily, it looks like future hearings will be after July 4th. What are you watching for as they resume next month?
Well, again, they were only supposed to have like 5 or 6 hearings, and we've sort of had now 5 or 6 hearings. And this one had been postponed from last week. And so the fact that the January 6th committee is going to continue to hold more hearings was not originally what they had sort of intended to do. But it sounds to me like they have more that they want to discuss in front of the American people. And so they're going to continue to have public hearings.
Lily, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
That's Lily Gorin, professor of politics and global studies at Carroll University. She joined us to talk about the January 6th hearing earlier this afternoon and what she'll be looking for next. You can find more coverage of those hearings at WPR.org from our partners at NPR as well, or you can go straight to NPR.org and see what they have to say over there. We'll continue, I believe, carrying those public hearings when they resume next month.